Blog Talk Radio.
Bravo the King. Today we are here with, as always, our co-host, Sean the Doctor Elmer. Sean, how's it going today?
Good, I'm ready to go. Good to be back on the show.
Yeah, same as well. Before we get started today, the number to the show is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. Email to the show is skbtradio@gmail.com. And the chat room is now open. Now, before we get started, I want to quickly ask you, Sean, but is Maxwell Ogden in the studio right now?
Yes,
he is.
Max, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How's it going today, Max?
That's good. How are you?
Not bad myself, as we got a very good show today. We're going to be discussing the NBA playoffs and the NFL draft, but today we begin with the NFL draft. First, I want to go to you, Sean, but just tell me which picks really surprised you in this year's NFL draft.
Well, the obvious one that stands out in my mind is the Eagles and having them trade up in the late round, in that later round, and acquire in getting Matt Barkley. I mean, I was like, wow. When I found out that, I was like, I could not believe it. I'm glad to have Barkley on the team. It was a very big surprise.
Yeah, I was very surprised, but there were many other surprises in the draft. By the way, we're expecting to have Philly Kingdom this Friday, or maybe not, but we're not sure yet. We're supposed to have on Dave Gosel from EaglesAct.com. We're just going to go over the Eagles offseason, plus Matt Barkley officially becoming an Eagle, so don't miss out on that show. But getting back to the show here, and now I think there were some other surprises, as you saw. Geno Smith, E.J. Manuel, Marcus Lattimore, Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, there were just a lot of surprises, so I want to go to you, Max. Name me some people who you were very surprised. getting selected in this year's NFL draft?
You know, a lot of people are obvious. I mean, the easy answer is obviously E.J. Manuel to the Bills in the first round. A lot of people viewed him as a second round, maybe third round prospect. I personally had him as my top quarterback on the board. We talked about this. So it's nice to see him go to the Bills. And, you know, when people are calling it a reach, you know, I think the Bills, you know, it's not really a reach because when you look at it, the Bills need a quarterback. They got rid of Ryan Fitzpatrick. They don't really have a serviceable option on the roster right now. And they did their homework. And they came away with the thought that E.J. Manuel was the best guy. But with that being said, for him to be the first quarterback off of the board was surprising. For him to go 16th overall was probably the biggest surprise. Other than that, I mean, you know, I think a guy like Kyle Long from out of Oregon to the Chicago Bears, that was surprising. I think he's going to be a very good player. I think he's a Pro Bowl caliber guard, one of the best guards, if not the best guard in this draft. I wouldn't say the best, but one of the best. So it was a nice pick, but obviously, again, it's a reach. But honestly, to me, the biggest surprise was Geno Smith falling and the fact that the New England Patriots acquired four picks for the number 29 pick. Four picks. To me, it's just another sign that the Patriots have mastered the NFL draft. They don't need to get a first-round pick. They rarely ever use their first-round pick. They almost always trade down. And, you know, I think the Vikings had a great draft, but I was just stunned that the Patriots could flip the 29th overall draft choice for four picks.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask you, Sean, but did you think Cordarrelle Patterson in exchange for four picks was way too much? I want to ask you because, from my opinion, I thought they gave up too much just for Cordarrelle Patterson, who does not yet know how to run routes going into the NFL. And, I mean, like I said on the NFL draft countdown show, he does have the best speed in the draft, but he still has to work on running routes and becoming very well in Minnesota. So I want to ask you, do you think they gave up too much for Cordarrelle Patterson from Tennessee?
I'm going to have to say yes, Julian. I mean, you know, when you look at that that whole draft trade that went down, I mean, they did give up a lot, but you have to wait and see how Cordarrelle Patterson turns out. I mean, I would have liked to get, if they could have gotten Justin Hunter, the other wide receiver from Tennessee, but as we know, I believe he was I believe he was off the board by the time the Vikings made that trade. So, I mean, you have to wait and see. I thought Hunter was the better wide receiver out of the two from Tennessee. So, but yeah.
Hey, Sean, just to cut you there for a sec, but I totally thought there were many other talented wide receivers they could have looked out for, including Justin Hunter, Robert Woods. I mean, there were plenty of wide receivers up at the time where Minnesota traded up and had the chance of picking up someone else besides Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, like I said, I don't know too much about Cordarrelle Patterson, but just have to wait and see. I mean, he's a prospect, and they say they drafted him to replace Percy Harvin. He's got some big shoes to fill, because when Percy Harvin was healthy, we all know what he was capable of doing in between when he didn't have his migraine issues and that. So, have to wait and see.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, too. They're expecting Cordarrelle Patterson to now be the punt returner, and he's going to fill in the shoes for Percy Harvin, who will learn from a veteran in the likes of Greg Jennings, who played alongside Aaron Rodgers for many years over in Green Bay. I'm looking forward to the combination, Greg Jennings and Cordarrelle Patterson, but there's just some what-ifs about Cordarrelle Patterson. So, I mean, I got to go to you, Max, but what did you think of the other picks, like Xavier Rhodes and Sharif Floyd, who dropped down pretty badly.
Obviously Cordarrelle Patterson is a risk, but don't forget he was projected to be a top 15 pick. So it's not as if drafting him at 29 is the issue. It's really what they gave up to get him. But honestly, I think that they had one of the best possible first rounds. They needed a guy up front after Williams retired. And Sharif Floyd was a guy who I personally thought was going to go number three to Oakland. He falls all the way to 23. Xavier Rhodes was a guy who could have gone in the top 20. Yeah, 25 seems like a good fit for him. He's a good, speedy cornerback. They need help in their pass defense, so it fits. And really for Patterson, you know, he has these physical gifts. He has these big hands. He has the speed, the doubt. He can work in the open space. And when he gets the ball in his hands, he's like a running back running with it. And the only issue, as you said, is his running routes. Well, it just so happens that he's about to be a teammate with one of the greatest route runners of our generation in Greg Jennings. So I think that the Vikings got this draft 100% right. You know, you would have liked to see them have a second, third round draft pick. But, you know, if they really believe in Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, I'd give them the benefit of the doubt. They needed a second receiver. They needed one. It wasn't just, we can afford to get one later. They needed one as soon as possible. And, you know, I agree. I think Justin Hunter is the better receiver. But if Patterson's biggest flaw is his route running, then Greg Jennings is the perfect guy to be his mentor.
Yeah, absolutely. The Minnesota Vikings, they trade up for Cordarrelle Patterson. But the Miami Dolphins as well traded up, and they traded up for the third overall pick in Deion Jordan from Oregon. Starting with you, Sean, but what did you think of the selection made by the Miami Dolphins?
I will say this about that selection. I think the Dolphins did it mainly to prevent the Eagles, who were drafting fourth with the next pick right after the Dolphins at the time, because, as we know, there was a hot rumor that the Eagles were in on Deion Jordan, and because Chip Kelly, as we know, used to coach Deion Jordan over at Oregon. So I was surprised to see the Dolphins move up and do it, but I will say this about Deion Jordan. I think it was a fantastic pick. I mean, Deion Jordan was one of the more outstanding linemen, one of them that was out there. So I like the pick, and I think Deion Jordan's going to have, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to have a huge career down in Miami.
Yeah, I'm really liking the decisions made by Jeff Lundnow, their GM. I think he's been really stepping up this offseason for the Miami Dolphins. Although, speaking of Deion Jordan, I think Deion Jordan, he's going to have a wonderful career with Miami. Like you said, Sean, he could have fell to the Eagles, but that did not happen. The Eagles, they're going to, since they didn't quite necessarily pick up a linebacker for the edge, I think they're going to actually have some concern going into the beginning of this season. Brandon Graham, he's switching over to outside linebacker, and it's going to be pretty tough for him to get used to that sort of adjustment. But going to you, Max, real quick, but what did you think of Deion Jordan going to the Miami Dolphins?
First and foremost, I think it was a smart move. You know, I don't know what Jordan's actual upside is. You know, in terms of production at the college level, he wasn't an elite pass rusher, but, you know, he's got the build, he's got the athleticism. And really, to me, the reason that I am most enticed about this is you're putting Deion Jordan with Cameron Wake, who's already one of the premier pass rushers in the NFL. So, again, just like Patterson, if you needed a guy to get a mentor to teach him how to rush the passer, I mean, Wake is the perfect guy for Jordan to follow in the footsteps of. So I think I think it was a smart move by Miami. It showed that they we're intent on finding a star player to put on their defense. Don't forget, I mean, as great as Wake has been, they haven't really had a star defensive player since, what, Jason Taylor? So, you know, hopefully Jordan can be that guy for them. Actually, the Eagles, I actually think they got the better end of the deal in the sense that, you know, it would have been nice to have a pass rusher, but you're bringing in a guy who, you know, Chip Kelly, he's not dumb on defense, so we shouldn't even think about saying that. But, you know, his offense requires athletic linemen to protect the quarterback. And last year, you know, you could say whatever you want about the Eagles. The number one problem with the Eagles, above all else, is they could not protect the quarterback at all. And, you know, there are injuries along the offensive line. I understand that. But you need a blindside guy because how many times did we see Michael Vick drop back in the pocket? You know, you could talk about all the fumbles and the interceptions, but how many times did we see him drop back and before he even hit his final step, he was getting hit by a lineman? So, you know, Lane Johnson, he's an athletic guy. You know, he played quarterback until he switched to the offensive line. So he can clearly run upfield and lay blocks. He can do whatever is necessary to protect Vic or whoever ends up being the Eagles quarterback. And, you know, Jordan would have been great to have. He is familiar with Kelly. But I think the Eagles got the better end of the deal.
Well, let's stay on top of the draft board here. Eric Fisher, it wasn't actually wasn't a surprise to me because my friend actually showed me on the ESPN Insider Edition that Todd McShay had Eric Fisher going number one overall to the Chiefs. And once I knew that Luke Jokel was going to slip and Eric Fisher was going to be taken number one overall. These guys pretty much have the same sort of athleticism, and Andy Reid and the whole rest of the Chiefs viewed Eric Fisher as a more better talent who can definitely become a Pro Bowler. So first going to you, Max, but what did you think of the pick, Eric Fisher going to the Chiefs over Luke Jokel?
I actually think Luke Jokel is the better player, but Eric Fisher is the more athletic of the two. You know, and you got to like to see, you know, a mid-major school make it, like a guy from Central Michigan. So, you know, it's nice to see. And I think, you know, Fisher and Jokel, there really wasn't much of a drop-off between the two. So it was just a matter of picking the guy that you feel best fits your system. And, you know, Andy Reid has a long history of knowing how to surround his quarterback with enough he hasn't really drafted the best wide receivers, but he's generally had a good offensive line. So, you know, you trust the pick. You know, Fisher and Jokel, they're both going to be great players. So it was really just pick which guy you felt fit your system, and apparently Andy Reid felt that guy was Eric Fisher.
Yeah. Sean, were you surprised that the Jaguars then decided to take Luke Jokel second overall? Didn't you think they could have landed Deion Jordan, especially when Gus Bradley is a defensive-minded coach?
Julian, I'm going to say no, I was not surprised with the Jags' selection of Luke Jokel. I mean, as we were just hinting on, he was supposed to be leading up to the draft in the days leading up to the first day of the NFL draft. He was rumored as the number one overall pick. So, but when Eric Fisher made his way, or whatever, however you want to say, up the board, you know, and the Chiefs felt, and Andy Reid felt that he was, Fisher was the better choice over Jokel. I mean, how far I know Deion Jordan has and what talent he has on his resume and what he brings to the table, I understand that. But Jokel, I was not surprised at all. I mean, how far is Jokel going to drop? I would have taken him number one. I mean, but I understand the Chiefs' selection. If they feel Fisher's got the better talent, go with him. I mean, but I would not have let him go past number two. Luke Jokel, wasn't one of the top prospects for no reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel, once again, that this wasn't sort of a big thing at all, and I think many fans didn't think it was a big thing at all either. you know, Eric Fisher, he's going to the Chiefs, and Luke Jokel is going to the Jaguars. I'm expecting those two will have fantastic careers and end up as Pro Bowlers. But now let's get to the New York Jets. The New York Jets. Beginning with you, Max. But what did you think of the Jets selecting most notably Geno Smith from West Virginia, Dee Milliner from Alabama, and then Sheldon Richardson from Missouri. What did you think of their selections this year in the NFL draft?
You know, I think Brian Winters, out of Kent State, was nice. But in the final three rounds, I think their final three picks were kind of questionable. I think everyone really questioned it. But their first three picks, I mean, outside of taking Richardson over Sharif Floyd, which ended up being the general consensus with Floyd falling all the way into the 20s, I think they had a great draft. I think the first two rounds, they got it right. Dee Milliner is the best cornerback in the draft. He's the best defensive back in the draft. He's drawn comparisons to Darrell Revis. You just traded Revis, so why not find his selection as early as possible? The Jets got a gift with Milliner falling to them, and they really didn't have another option but to pick him. At 13, again, I would have personally rather seen Floyd go there. I honestly would have rather seen Floyd go in the top five. But if they feel that Richardson is the guy, you know, if there's one thing you can't question Rex Ryan on, it is defense. You know, the offense may be inconsistent, but the Jets' defense is always one of the best in the league. So if Rex Ryan feels that this is the guy he can mold, then trust him. You know, he's done this before in New York, in Baltimore, wherever he's been. He's known how to build a great defensive line. As for Geno Smith, I mean, why would anyone oppose that? The best quarterback in the draft. You get him in the second round as opposed to in the top 10 where some people thought he could go. People are saying, oh, well, they're crowding the quarterback position. Yeah, but you know what? If they hadn't drafted a quarterback, everyone would have been complaining that they didn't replace Sanchez. So you get Geno Smith, a guy who could either start today or sit for a year and come in and instantly be a better player than they have on their roster currently. I can't see anything wrong with their first three picks. You know, during the rest of the draft, you know, you can raise some questions, but during the first three rounds, I feel like the Jets got it right.
Yeah, I think they did pretty good overall, but I just wonder now what this all means for Mark Sanchez since the Jets have now drafted Geno Smith. So going to you, Sean, but what do you think the situation is going to be in New York heading into the season?
As far as quarterback goes, I will say this. They're going, I believe the Jets are going to cut or do whatever they're going to do to get rid of Mark Sanchez. I mean, they know, at least in my eyes, I think that Geno Smith should be the opening day starter. I mean, you know, he was the best quarterback, I feel, available in the draft. So I think, you know, he's deserving, and once he learns the system in training camp, I don't see any reason why not that he can't be the opening day starter for the Jets.
Yeah, they were saying how Marty Mornway, former Eagles offensive coordinator, who is now with the Jets, they said he was the main reason why they selected Geno Smith a little later in the draft, because Geno Smith can work in Marty Mornway's offense. So it's going to be interesting to see what Geno Smith can do. As I feel too that he was one of the best available quarterbacks. But here's a question up for debate though: do you think EJ Manuel was a wise selection made by the Buffalo Bills? Starting off with you, Matt.
I do. I think that, you know, I think EJ Manuel is the best quarterback in this draft. You know, don't forget we're in an era in which it's all about the read option. And EJ Manuel is the kind of guy who could stand in the pocket. You know, he's a pocket passer. That's what you need to realize. He's a pocket passer. You know, he's good in the short to intermediate game. He's not great throwing downfield, but I think he's underrated in that aspect. I think he was a lot more accurate than people gave him credit. You know, his wide receiver core did take a lot of hits from injuries. But, you know, to me, he's I compared him to this year's Russell Wilson in the sense that he would be drafted late and then rise up and be a starter this year. The only difference is he got drafted earlier than expected. So to me, the only question is, you know, can he handle the burden of expectation? Because if you look at it, whoever the Bills drafted at quarterback, regardless of who it was going to be in the running for the starting job. Let's be real about that. You know, when your second best option is Tavares Jackson, you know that there's going to be some quarterback controversy. So I think getting a quarterback as early as possible was a smart move. You don't want to risk your guy that you think is the right guy coming off of the board before you get him. You know, everyone was obviously surprised that Ryan Nassib wasn't the pick because, you know, his familiarity with the head coach Doug Marrone. But, you know, I think you need to take a step back and say, you know what, forget about what we expected. If this head coach decided that I would rather draft this guy over the guy that I've coached for 4 years, that should tell you that he's comfortable with what EJ Manuel can do for the Bills from day one.
Yeah, how about you, Sean?
I'm one that actually believes that the Bills should have drafted Ryan Nassib, and I expected them to draft Ryan Nassib, and I was surprised they went with EJ Manuel. Nothing against EJ Manuel. I think EJ Manuel was a great quarterback down at FSU. So, like I said, I would have, if it was me, I most likely would have went with Ryan Nassib, but they went with Manuel. Like Max said, they take a step back and, maybe Doug Marrone felt that Manuel was the better choice, or he obviously felt he was the better choice because that's who he drafted. So we'll see. I mean, I like the talent Manuel has, but it was, I'll just say, it was a surprise to see him drafted, at least to me, over Ryan Nassib.
Yeah, I feel EJ Manuel is a great leader. He's a great leader. And also, he did very well during the Senior Bowl. And so I think EJ Manuel is going to be actually nice competition for Kevin Kolb in Buffalo. We're not going to talk too much further about quarterbacks, but I do want to ask you guys just by asking you, Max, but do you think we're going to see any quarterbacks drafted from this year's draft starting on day one of the NFL season?
I think Manuel's going to start. it makes sense. Again, you know, the Bills don't really have a better alternative on their depth chart right now. You know, Tavares Jackson, you know, are you going to start Tavares Jackson? Are you going to start Kevin Cobb after all that he went through? You know, Cobb could be an option, but I think, you know, Manuel has better size than Cobb. I think he's honestly a better quarterback right now than Cobb. But again, you know, Cobb is an option. Other than that, I don't really know if anyone will. You know, we talked about the Jets. I think that, you know, last year, I think that their plan backfired in the sense that I think what Jets ownership wanted to do was say, hey, Mark Sanchez, we gave you this contract. You're our franchise quarterback, but we're not going to be patient with you. So we're bringing in Tebow to send you that message. But Tebow ended up being a circus. He ended up being a sideshow. He ended up distracting Sanchez more than he did, you know, inspire him to play better football. Now you bring in Geno Smith and you say, look, we brought in a legitimate quarterback. Nobody's going to question that this guy can play the position. And now it's on to you. We'll give you a short leash. If you're still making those boneheaded plays, running into your offensive lineman's butt and throwing interceptions like it's nobody's business, you lost the starting job, and you lost it for good because Geno Smith is our rookie quarterback that we're going to trust to carry us into the future. In that same breath, Sanchez could take it as, you know what, now they're actually sending me a message. I'm not insulted by this. Let me go out and prove that I can be the best quarterback I can be, and suddenly the Jets have a quarterback to trade. But again, outside of Manuel and Geno Smith, I couldn't imagine any rookie quarterback starting on day one.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to say this off the record, but I absolutely think that no quarterback drafted from this year's NFL draft will start on day one of the NFL season. That's my opinion. Let's go to you, Sean, real quickly, but what do you think?
I think I have to disagree with you, Julian. I can see a couple of the quarterbacks starting potentially in the season opener. I can see Geno Smith, as we were just talking about, but for the reasons that Max noted, because, you know, I foresee the Jets, as I said, also that I foresee them getting rid of Sanchez now that they have Geno Smith. And I'm going to – it may seem as a long shot, but, like, if he can't stay healthy, I mean, you know, I wouldn't even rule out Matt Barkley in Philly. I mean, you know, Michael Vick, I know he's Michael Vick, but still, Michael Vick is – he's going to be the starter, I'll say, on day one, but how long can he hold up? So that's my thing. That's why I'm not ruling out Matt Barkley as a potential for next season, so keep an eye on that. But the one that's most likely, at least in my eyes, is Geno Smith for sure.
The number to show today is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733 if you want to talk to me, Max, or Sean, the Dr. Elmer. So, before we get to other things, I want to ask you guys, who do you feel was the biggest steal in this year's first round? Starting off with you, Max.
In the first round, I think, as I said before, I think that has to be Dee Milliner. You know, a lot of people thought that he was going to go 5 to Detroit. Some people thought he was going to go 6 to Cleveland. I didn't really think he would go past 7 to Arizona because you have the potential to pair Patrick Peterson and Dee Milliner and have probably the best cornerback pair in the entire league. He falls all the way to the Jets. The Jets need it to replace Darrelle Revis. You know, Cromartie had a great season last year. He really did, and he doesn't get enough credit for that. You know, Kyle Wilson is coming along relatively nicely, but he hasn't really displayed the ability to play every down. And now you're a Jets team that lives and dies by defense, and you get the best defensive back possible, a guy who's been compared to Darrelle Revis. So to me, that has to be the biggest steal. You know, I don't see how he fell to 9. And the only other option for me in terms of steal is at 23 when the Vikings stole Sharif Floyd.
How about you, Sean?
I have to agree with Max. I mean, you know, if you want to know my personal opinion about Dee Milliner real quickly, I actually was surprised just saying off the record or whatever, I was surprised that the Eagles didn't get Dee Milliner. I thought Dee Milliner would have been a good fit in Chip Kelly's system or defensive-wise. So he was the best cornerback in the league in the draft as a prospect. So, I mean, I can't believe the Jets. He fell to the Jets like Max was saying. But another guy I have to agree with you, Max, is Sharif Floyd. The Vikings, they got a real stud there. I mean, so they're my two steals, so to speak.
Well, this is a tough one for me, but I'm just going to say off the record, I think truly both Deion Jordan and Zee Ansa were the steals of this year's first round. Ziggy Ansah is very fast on the edge, while Deion Jordan, we said it dating back to the NFL Draft Countdown show, this year he was the best pass rusher coming out of the draft, and the way the Dolphins trade up just to receive him, you're getting one hell of a star. So I'm going with Deion Jordan and Ziggy Ansah as my two surprises. I mean, two steals. But now let's get forward to Monte Teo. Monte Teo was claimed by the San Diego Chargers. If you want to hear me personally, I think Monte Teo he's going to be right near home. He's going to be right near home, and I think he's going to feel comfortable in San Diego. So I want to first go to you, Sean, but how did you feel of Monte Teo winding up with the San Diego Chargers?
This was a topic I couldn't wait for us to get to, Julian. I felt, like you said, it's going to be close to home for Teo, and I foresee him being really comfortable. I mean, you know, he's going to put all of what's happened the past several months behind him, and I see it being an excellent fit, outstanding fit. I mean, I was wondering up until the time he was drafted 39th by the Chargers, I was wondering who was going to take the risk, gamble, whatever you want to call it, and draft Monte Teo. And, you know, now that I think about it, since it's closer to home, I can't say it was a surprise pick, but I feel he's going to be comfortable out there. And I actually, for however long he's with San Diego, I think Monte Teo is going to have a better career than some people may think.
Yeah, how about you, Max?
I actually loved it. I was hoping that he would go in the first round because, you know what, the whole off-the-field issue, it's overblown. Honestly, I don't see how that really impacts your team. I mean, let's be real about this for one second. The guy had a girlfriend. Turned out it wasn't really a girl. That's the end of the story. The only reason the media took hold of it is because he's a professional athlete. Happens every day. It's not a big deal. The big deal is this. Monte Teo was a Heisman Trophy finalist. And as I recall, Julian, you and I both had him as our Heisman Trophy winner this year. Suddenly, he's gone from being the best linebacker in the nation to being, oh, yeah, he's second-rate, second round. He's not a second-round draft board choice. Monte Teo is a Pro Bowl-caliber player. You know, he's not extremely fast. He can't take on blockers head-on. Yeah, that's true. But you know what? He has incredible instincts. He gets after the ball as well as anyone in the nation. Now, anyone in the draft class, don't be surprised if Teo leads all linebackers in interceptions during his career. Don't be surprised if he ends up getting 100-plus tackles per season because it's all about instincts. It's all about putting your head where it needs to be. And when it comes to playing on the field, nobody's ever questioned his focus. You know, these off-the-field issues to me are ridiculous. And in San Diego, I think he's in a perfect place. You and Sean both said it. He's close to home. He's in a place that he's comfortable with. And, you know, I think that now that he's been drafted, the weight of the world has been lifted off of his shoulders, and he can say, you know what, now I can get back to football. Because that's the only thing that matters. I don't care about, you know, he doesn't get arrested. You know, he's never had run-ins with the law. It's about some scam that Deadspin found. And to me, that has no relevance in the world of sports, and it never has. So to me, you know, Teo is a top 20 pick in this draft. I thought he was the best inside linebacker in the draft, and I didn't think that the comparisons with everyone else were fair because Teo's proven himself. I think he's going to be a great player. I think he's going to be a Pro Bowl player, and San Diego is the perfect place for him to be.
Yeah, absolutely, especially when they just hired Mike McCoy, and, you know, this is going to be a nice, fresh start for Monte Teo, close to home, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in San Diego. I could also say one other thing, but man, how ironic is it? Junior Seau and now Monte Teo go into the San Diego Chargers.
Yeah, and I was just going to add a quick point about that, Julian. I think that's an excellent point you bring up about Junior Seau. I mean, you have that whole situation with Seau that happened a year or so ago, and now they get an excellent, as I have to agree with you, Max. I think Monte Teo, despite that whole debacle he put up in the national championship game last year, I feel he was the best inside linebacker, and I think he's going to have an outstanding career, and, you know, maybe he will be. It may be a reach for me to say this now, but maybe he will be rank up there with the ranks of, say, a Junior Seau by the time his career's done. We'll have to wait and see.
Would you like to comment on that, Max?
No, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. I think Teo, he's, as we said, he's a great player. And he's a guy who, you know, you could say whatever you want about the scandal, but nobody has ever questioned what he does on the field. And the only reason questions have been raised is because he rose to stardom as a Heisman Trophy candidate. The fact of the matter is, he was the leader of a team that was undefeated until they reached the national championship game. And you could talk about the Alabama game. Let me ask you one question. What other team in the nation, regardless of how bad their conference was undefeated up to that point? None. So that's all I really have to say, because they had a freshman, they had a young quarterback in Everett Golson in there. They had inconsistency at quarterback all year. Their offense rarely ever put out anything. And Manti Te'o led that defense to elite performances week in and week out. I think he's going to do the same thing in the NFL.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. But let's get on to Eddie Lacy dropping down to the Green Bay Packers. Many teams decide to pass up on Eddie Lacy, former Alabama running back. So first going to you, Sean, what did you think of Eddie Lacy dropping so far down to the Green Bay Packers?
I'll tell you what. If you want to say it, he could be, you know, we were just talking about it a few minutes ago, but he could be, that could be a steal for the Green Bay Packers if you look at it, but in that way. But anyway, to get to Eddie Lacy, at least in my eyes, he was the best running back in the draft, no doubt about it. I think he's going to be an excellent running back for Aaron Rodgers after the contract Aaron Rodgers just signed over the draft weekend with the Packers. So I think, you know, he's going to have an excellent career in Green Bay. And I'll tell you what, that's good for the Packers. They got the best running back in the NFL draft this year, no doubt about it.
What do you think, Max? And also, who do you think is going to wind up having a better career, Jonathan Franklin from UCLA or Eddie Lacy?
I personally like Jonathan Franklin more. I like him more all along, but I don't think that disregards how great of a pick this was for the Green Bay Packers. I mean, you're talking about Eddie Lacy, a guy who a lot of people thought he was going to go in the first round, maybe to the Cincinnati Bengals, maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower, but I don't think anyone really expected him to fall past the first few picks in the second round. You know, you have a bunch of teams up top that could use a running back. You know, you think of Detroit as one that could use some running back depth. But he ends up falling. You know, the Bengals end up passing on him to get Giovanni Bernard in the second round. You know, even the Chargers could have used a running back. So many teams could have used a running back. They passed on him. Le'Veon Bell went before him. So my question for him is simple. You're now entering arguably the best offense in the NFL. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is the highest paid player in the NFL for a reason. My question is, are you going to use this like Brady Quinn used it and let it bring you down? Or are you going to use it like Aaron Rodgers used it and let it be motivation? Because if he's motivated by this, you know, Lacy only needs to carry the ball 15 times a game. He's playing with Aaron Rodgers, who's proven capable of throwing it 40, 50 times a game and winning. So as long as Lacy can run the play action, as long as he can run between the tackles, pick up those short yardage gains, which the Packers haven't had the past two seasons, and that's why they haven't been really contending for the Super Bowl, I think Lacy could be a great player from day one. I think he can be the best running back in this draft. With that being said, I do think that I honestly had him as my fourth-ranked running back, but I honestly think that this is a great class of running backs. I think that a guy like Christine Michael is good. I think Monty Ball is probably the best running back in here. And then you got Jonathan Franklin. But, you know, again, you've got a class of 4, 5, 6, 7 running backs that could be very good players. Even if they're not Pro Bowlers, they could be good players. I think that Lacy just, you know, if he understands his role, it's similar to what it was at Alabama. You know, A.J. McCarron dropped back a lot. You're going to have, you know, Aaron Rodgers doing the same. So as long as he is okay with not getting handed the ball every time, you know, I think he can be a great player.
Yeah, I think he can be a great player too, especially when the Green Bay Packers have been trying to finally find a running back. So they finally got a running back in Eddie Lacy, and so I think this is a wonderful pick for Green Bay. Now, I also want to say Monte Ball. He was sure another excellent pick made by the Denver Broncos. But now let's talk about another running back in particular. He goes by the name of Marcus Lattimore. He was selected by the San Francisco 49ers, I believe, in the fourth round. So first going to you, Sean, but what do you think of this pick when the 49ers actually have a lot of depth created at the running back position?
I can agree with the depth part. They definitely do have that out there in San Francisco. Jim Harbaugh definitely has depth at running back, but at the same time, you did get a guy, as long as he's all recovered from that gruesome injury that he had, which all looks good for Lattimore. I think he's, you know, he's another, he wasn't as good in my eyes, or should I say, Eddie Lacy was a little bit better than I feel than Marcus Lattimore, but nothing against Lattimore. Lattimore, I think he's eventually going to get playing time out there in San Francisco in Jim Harbaugh's offensive system. So, and I think he's going to be a stud. I mean, he was a stud under the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier. He was Steve Spurrier's best running back in his time at South Carolina. So I think Marcus Lattimore was a great pick for the 49ers and Jim Harbaugh.
If you had to ask me, I thought it wasn't a good pick made by the 49ers. I just feel they have so many other running backs like Kendall Hunter, Michael James, Frank Gore, even though he's starting to slow down just a little bit due to his age. Michael James, Kendall Hunter, don't forget, they were drafted back in 2011, 2012, early in those drafts. So, this pick I felt was not so well, especially when Marcus Lattimore, I said on the NFL Draft Countdown show, is by far, I feel, one of the best running backs going into the NFL. So I got to go to you, Max, but did you think this is a good pick made by the 49ers?
Yeah, because what did they have to lose? They have the deepest roster in the NFL, and anyone who tries to contest that, you're biased, because it's true. They have depth at every single position. They have Pro Bowlers at almost every single position. So when it gets to the fourth round, you know, you can afford to say, you know what, Marcus Lattimore is coming off of two severe knee injuries. He may never be the same player. But we're risking a fourth-round draft pick on it. You know, they got a safety. They got two defensive ends that are of a high quality. They got a good tight end. They got a good wide receiver. And then they decided, you know what, let's take some risks. And they did that. They got Marcus Lattimore. They got a player who's very similar to Colin Kaepernick and B.J. Daniels out of South Florida. So, you know, I don't know if Marcus Lattimore is going to play. You know, Frank Gore, you know, for all the talk of him slowing down, he still ran for over 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns, nearly 5 yards per carry. The only reason he didn't touch more is because against the Giants and against the Seahawks, he carried the ball less than 10 times. And against Miami, he only carried it 12 times, and he still had 63 yards in the touchdown. So, you know, Frank Gore is still a Pro Bowl caliber player. You can hand the ball to him 25 times a game. You can give it to him 10 times a game. You can work out of the backfield. But I think the key is Frank Gore is a guy who, before he came to the NFL, recovered from a severe knee injury. So if there's anybody who can help Marcus Lattimore through this, it would be Frank Gore. Now, I don't think Lattimore is going to get much playing time. You know, Kendall Hunter is a very effective player. LaMichael James is the same. But those are two scat backs. And I think you look at Marcus Lattimore, and you say, you know what, this could be our running back of the future. Frank Gore is 29. You know, even though he's still playing at a high level, you assume based off of age that he has 2-3 years of elite play left at best. So, you know, he doesn't need to play right now. I don't think that he would be an effective player if he played right now. He hasn't seen the field in a while. You know, he's still recovering from the knee injury. Don't forget about that. He did put on a great show at his personal workout, but he's still recovering. So, you know, I think that it's a nice pick for the future. I don't know if it'll pan out right away, but, you know, when you look at how much depth they have, they don't really need it to pan out right away.
I mean, the way Marcus Lattimore was able to pull himself together for some of the pre-draft workouts was amazing, especially when he was still in the process of recovering from a very deadly injury. So, I mean, it just shows you that Marcus Lattimore, he could have huge potential along with the San Francisco 49ers. Now, let's talk about a huge pick, Tyrann Mathieu to the Arizona Cardinals. He'll now be pairing up once again with Patrick Peterson, former teammate, back over at LSU. I want to first go to you, Max, but how did you feel the pick, and do you think Tyrann Mathieu is going to do very well alongside Patrick Peterson, his former teammate?
I honestly thought that Tyrann Mathieu would be out of the NFL in 1 or 2 years, maybe 3 or 4 years, because of his attitude. So, like, his, you know, not in terms of the severity, but I felt like his career was heading down a similar path as Adam Pac-Man Jones. You know, an elite playmaker, but his head just isn't on right. And suddenly he goes to the one team that can keep him in check. He's going to team up with teammate Kevin Minter, who the Cardinals selected in the second round, who's also at LSU with him. More importantly, he's going to be with Patrick Peterson, as you said. And Patrick Peterson has gone on record multiple times saying that, you know, he was basically Matthew's big brother while they were at LSU together. And I think if anyone can keep this kid's head in check, it would be Peterson. And if that's the case, then suddenly you have one of the best return games in the NFL with Matthew and Peterson. And you have one of the best cornerback core, one of the best defensive backfields. So is it a high-risk pick? Yes, it is a high-risk pick. I honestly wouldn't have touched him anywhere before the sixth round just because of the risk in it. But if you have Patrick Peterson on your roster, it's an entirely different story. And I think Matthew, you know, you still have to see it play out. But, you know, I think Matthew was one of several great picks by the Cardinals this year.
Before we go to you, Sean, I just want to quickly say what a coincidence Max actually compared Pac-Man Jones to Tyrann Mathieu, because I actually drew the same similar comparison. So what a coincidence. But now going to you, Sean, but how did you feel the pick?
I, for the reasons that you guys were stating, I liked the pick. I mean, you know, putting him in position with a guy that knows him real well, a guy that was teammates with him, a couple of guys that were teammates with him, but even more. So Patrick Peterson, putting Tyrann Mathieu there with him out in Arizona, I think you're going to see a complete turnaround in Tyrann Mathieu. I think he's going to have an excellent career, and yes, I could see the comparisons that you were making, Julian, to Pac-Man Jones in a way. So, but I think Tyrann Mathieu, if I had to say in my opinion, I think he's going to have a better career than Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah, most definitely. So before we get to our final question, I want to say on other notes, Colin Klein from Kansas State, he was recently, as of today, picked up by the Houston Texans. He's expected to be their tight end there. And then you have Denard Robinson, who was taken by the Jaguars in the NFL draft. Many are expecting that he is now going to shift over to the wide receiver position. So real quickly, guys, but going to you, Sean, but what do you think about these two individuals?
I like both guys, especially Denard Robinson. I mean, granted, he is going to be a wide receiver. He's just too small to be anything else but that in the NFL. So, but because he has a quarterback-like instincts and because of his quickness, hence the name Shoelace, the nickname Shoelace that he bears, I think he will have a decent career for a smaller wide receiver type guy, wide receiver quarterback type guy. So I think, but Colin Klein, I could see him being a, now that he was signed as an person that was undrafted, but he was signed, I think he's going to have a decent career as well.
Yeah. Is there anything you would like to say, Max?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting how it plays out. You know, don't forget Jacksonville is a team that has experimented like this before. They have Matt Jones. But, you know, again, it really just depends on, you know, how do you get him into the offense? You know, is he going to be a Devin Hester where he really can't catch the ball? Is he going to be a slot guy? And if he is, do they even have a quarterback to throw it his way? You know, I think that those are all questions for Jacksonville to answer. And quite frankly, because of the team he went to, I wouldn't actually rule out Robinson playing a little quarterback during his career because Gabbard and Henny are hardly the most reliable options.
Huh. Well, Shaw would sure happy to hear that since he's a Michigan Wolverine fan. What'd you say, Sean?
Yeah, I would like to see Robinson play quarterback, but as I just said, I just think he just, at least in my eyes, he just, unless he sprinkles some miracle grow on himself and he grows like another 6 or 8 inches or foot or whatever overnight, which we know that's not going to happen. That was just a joke off the record. But anyway, I just don't think he has the size to be a quarterback. I think he's best fit as being a wide receiver type guy in the NFL.
Yeah, very good. So we can't waste any more time, so we're going to go on to the final question pertaining to the NFL draft, which is, which team did you think came up as the big winners in this year's NFL draft, starting with you, Max?
You know, normally I hate the way they draft, but I thought the Cincinnati Bengals had the best draft. I say that without bias. They got the best tight end in the draft, Tyler Eifert. They can now run a 2-tight-end set with Eifert and Jermaine Gresham. They got an explosive runner, which is what they need in Giovanni Bernard. You know, Ben Jarvis Grinnell has topped 1,000 yards last year. He can run between the tackles. He runs physically. They just needed a guy who can get outside, and Bernard Scott really hasn't done that. They got a guy, Marcus Hunt, who impressed everybody at the combine with his athleticism. Sean Williams was an incredible safety at Georgia. Sean Porter was a great tackler when using the right schematics. And then, you know, you get guys like Rex Burkhead, who was a star at Nebraska, Kobe Hamilton, who was one of the top receivers in the SEC. So I think, you know, I think the Bengals won. And I honestly also think, depending on how Matthew plays out, I think the Cardinals won.
Wow. I think, from my standpoint, I would have to say the Baltimore Ravens did a fine job in this year's NFL draft. I told you, Max, on one of our previous shows getting back to what I was saying, I thought this was a very important draft for the Baltimore Ravens this year, and this draft they really excelled. They picked up Matt Elam from Florida, and they also got Arthur Brown, who is my sleeper originally from the NFL Draft Countdown show. I think he's going to be a terrific leader, Arthur Brown, while I feel Matt Elam is going to fill a good void inside for Ed Reed, who is now with the Houston Texans. So I thought they did pretty well overall, the Baltimore Ravens. So going to you, Sean, but which team in particular did you feel came up as the big winners?
There's a lot of them, Julian, but if I had to name one, you may think this could be a reach, so to speak, as a team that came up as winners in the NFL draft, but for the pick of Sharif Floyd, I'm going to go with the Vikings. Yeah, I mean, I really thought highly of Sharif Floyd, you know, once I've, you know, seen a little bit about him. I mean, I think the Vikings got a really great pick there, and I think he's going to have an excellent career in Minnesota. So I'm going to say, as it may come as somewhat of a surprise, like I said, but I'm going with Minnesota.
Minnesota. Huh. Well, I don't know. What do you think of that, Max? Do you think Minnesota are true winners in this year's NFL draft?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they need to fill void, that defensive tackle, cornerback, and wide receiver, and they got three of the best players in the draft at all of those positions. So, you know, this is a team that made the playoffs last year, and, you know, everybody's going to say, oh, well, that was all Adrian Peterson. I mean, it wasn't only Adrian Peterson last year, you know. They played decently against the run. Obviously, AP carried the team, but they played decently against the run. Their two biggest needs were finding wide receivers and finding people who could defend against the run, against the pass. And, you know, you got a guy who can clog up the middle in Sharif Floyd, who I thought was the best defensive lineman in the draft. You get a very good cornerback in Xavier Rhodes, and you get a great wide receiver in, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson. I think later down the line, I like that they got Jeff Baca. I don't know if the rest of their draft was great, but I think their first three picks were very effective picks. And don't forget, they do have a Pro Bowl tight end in Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah, I'm a little shaky on your judgment, Sean, but I'm going to say I think they look pretty good going into the season. And you know what? And I think you brought this up, Sean, but if the Minnesota Vikings were to pick up Brian Urlacher, I mean, man, this team could make the playoffs next year once again.
Not only did I bring it up.
And do some good things. Adrian Peterson's going to be coming back. And I think Christian Ponder, I think he's going to step into full form now since he's in his third year. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see what Minnesota pulls.
You know, the one thing about Christian Ponder that's important to note is, you know, last year, you know, Kyle Rudolph was a young player, you know, and he really came into his own, you know, last year catching 9 touchdowns. He was the Pro Bowl MVP. Don't forget about that. So, you know, you have a great tight end there, and that's helpful. But, you know, once Percy Harvin went down last year, you know, Christian Ponder didn't have anyone to throw to. You know, it was everyone saying they don't have a pass game. I mean, who are you expecting him to hit? And he still completed over 60% of his passes, which is impressive to me. So I like Ponder. I think with Greg Jennings in there, as long as Jennings can stay healthy, he's got a guy that he can, you know, either work the short routes. And more specifically, I said the statistic before, over 80% of Greg Jennings' career catches. Have been for first downs or touchdowns. And this man has 425 catches in his career. So that speaks for itself in the effectiveness of Jennings. And, you know, now that he has Patterson, he has a guy he can go downfield to. You know, Percy Harvin was versatile, but he wasn't really a go-up-and-get-it type of receiver. I think Patterson can be that guy. So, you know, I'm interested in seeing how the season plays out for them, you know. Maybe a guy like Jarius Wright or Greg Childs can step up and be a third option at receiver. But, you know, I think that the Vikings did well in the first round, and hopefully that means they can make it back to the playoffs.
Yeah, and don't forget last year they drafted Matt Khalil in the first round. He's sure a good guy for Christian Ponder to step up in the pocket. So, I mean, hey, watch out for Minnesota next year. You never know what could happen. So that ends our discussion on the NFL draft. We are now going to move forward on the NBA playoffs. I just got the score, but the Heat have just swept the Milwaukee Bucks. No surprise at all. Dwayne Wade sat out that game, and Miami was still able to win and sweep the Milwaukee Bucks. If you guys feel free, or if you guys want to comment, then feel free to go ahead. But I'm not going to comment. So. Okay. I'm not going to comment, though, because I didn't see this as a significant series at all in the NBA playoffs. So feel free to comment.
I'll just say this real quickly about that Heat-Bucks series. Guard that made that outrageous prediction that Bucks were going to beat the Heat, that he feels like foolish now.
Well, I mean, what did you want him to say? Did you want him to go into the playoffs and say, yeah, you know what, you're asking me what's going to happen, we're going to lose to the Heat? He knew he was the underdog, but if you go into the playoffs thinking you can't win, why are you playing the game?
I understand that, Max, but I'm just saying, you know, to go in there and that just gave the, if you want me to say, at least in my eyes, if I was putting myself in the Heat shoes, that gave them all the more motivation to go out and, like, smash the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely didn't want to say it because, you know, I think whoever asked him the question is really his fault because, what did you want him to say though when the reporter asked him, what do you think is going to happen in this series? Well, the Heat are going to sweep us. I mean, you're never going to hear a player say that they're going to lose, but I mean, obviously, no one actually thought that was a realistic possibility. So, and again, it clearly did motivate the Heat. The Heat honestly didn't really play that great during this series, but they still won.
All right, well, are you guys through with the Miami Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's now talk about the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks. The game became final just a while ago, but the Boston Celtics avoided a sweep by defeating the New York Knicks in overtime. I think the Knicks have played very well, but this time out, the Celtics sustained their lead throughout the whole entire game, which led them to the victory. So, first going to you, Sean, if I had to ask you this, do you think the Celtics can pull off a turnaround just like the Boston Red Sox did back when they overcame the New York Yankees and went to the World Series?
Absolutely not. The Boston Celtics, Doc Rivers, doesn't have one key. I know one player doesn't make the team, but in the Boston Celtics case, I don't see this series lasting beyond its next game, so I'm not exactly sure when Game 5 is, now that Game 5 is necessary, but I see this series ending in Game 5 because Boston doesn't have two words, Rajon Rondo. Rajon Rondo makes things happen for the Boston Celtics. I know they still have Paul Pierce, but he is older now, so I think that series will end in Game 5.
Mm. Yeah, I would have to agree. Rajon Rondo is an essential part of your ball club, and when you lose him to such a devastating injury, you're going to figure that the Celtics will be in danger as they are right now. But going to you, Max, do you think the Celtics can turn it around, or do you think the Knicks are just going to win the next time they play the Boston Celtics?
Now, conventional wisdom says that the Celtics are going to pull off the 3-0 comeback with the series. It's never been done before. But I grew up in New York. I know what the Knicks do. I know that the Knicks haven't won a playoff series in 13 years. So I'm just going to say, until the Knicks win game five, win the fourth game to win the series, I'm not counting anything out. I do think the Knicks are the better team. I do think that they deserve to win this series. But until it actually gets done, no one should be dumb enough to bet on the Knicks, because, you know, I think that they're a good enough team to win the title. I think they're a good enough team to beat Miami. But until they actually get the monkey off their back and win this series, you know, the proverbial Steve Young, anything is possible. But just to go back and touch on something, I remember a few months ago I was on Sports Kingdom, and a lot of people were saying that, you know, oh, well, the Celtics have won 7 in a row. They went hot when Rondo went down. They don't really need Rondo. The ball's moving. That's what I like to call playing for your star instead of playing through your star. And that lasts a little while, but that's something called momentum. And now that momentum has gone away, it's come down to how good are the Celtics. And without Rajon Rondo, they just don't have offense. And quite frankly, he was the general of their defense as well. You know, he controlled the perimeter. He and Avery Bradley were an elite defensive tandem. And now, you know, I really don't understand what Doc Rivers is doing by putting Jason Terry in over Courtney Lee, because Courtney Lee has had so much success over slashing scores. So you'd think that, you know, maybe he can slow down J.R. Smith, which not many people have done. But, again, without Rondo, the Celtics aren't going far. Maybe they'll take it to 7, but when it comes down to it, you don't want to bet on the Knicks because of their history. But, you know, as long as J.R. Smith is back in the lineup, the Knicks are just too powerful.
This is a debatable question I'm willing to ask, but Sean, do you think after the playoffs, Paul Pierce or even Kevin Garnett may retire?
That's, like you put it, Julian, that is a very debatable question, but I do think that I'm going to say they could both retire, but I think that it depends on how that series finishes up. I know most likely, like I said, the Celtics are not going to win the series, but we'll see. I mean, Paul Pierce, maybe he'll go somewhere else. I can't foresee that happening, but we'll wait and see.
What about you, Max?
You know, you think that, oh, you know, watching the series, maybe they're over the hill. You know, they've been past their prime for a few years. People really don't understand. You know, I've always said that I put Rajon Rondo in the same class as Chris Paul and Deron Williams, the point guards that no one else in the world reaches. And the reason is, you know, everyone's saying, well, Rondo's surrounded by all this talent. Yeah, remove Rondo and look how good they are. That they're a below 500 team without Rajon Rondo. If you really want to get down to crunching numbers, to me, it'll come down to this: Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, if they're nothing else, they're two of the most fierce competitors in the history of the NBA, in the history of professional sports. So do you think that losing in the first round is the way that they want to go out? I personally can't see it. I honestly think that the Celtics are at their best when they have Paul Pierce either at the 2 or the 3, and they move Jeff Green to the 3 or the 4 and don't start Brandon Bass. But at the end of the day, it's just going to come down to Rajon Rondo calling Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, talking to them and saying, look, I want you to come back. And if he doesn't do that, maybe they won't. But if he does, I imagine that they're going to do it, because if Rondo says we can compete for another title, we've seen what Rondo can do, specifically in the playoffs, and I think they'll give it one last try.
Huh. Well, I think they're getting to that age, but like you said, Max, I don't think they would like to end it on this kind of note.
Yeah, I mean, when you're champ, you're their champion. You know, Paul Pierce is one of the greatest scorers in the history of the NBA, and he really is one of the best all-around players in the history of the NBA. Kevin Garnett, you know, everybody's talking about point forwards today. You know, LeBron set the standard. Kevin Garnett set the standard. I mean, if you're old enough to remember Kevin Garnett in his prime, Kevin Garnett was the Minnesota Timberwolves' primary ball handler. He was their best defender. He was their best jump shooter, and he was their best low post presence. So he was the do-it-all player before LeBron came around. Now his mobility is limited. You know, he's an MVP. He's a defensive player of the year. He's an NBA champion. And you're telling me that he's going to end his career losing in the first round to his arch rival, New York Knicks? I can't see that happening.
Yeah. Well, I hear you, Max. But let's move forward now to the Indiana Pacers and Atlanta Hawks. They're tied at 2-2 right now in their series. Atlanta just came off the win recently. So, first going to you, Sean, who do you predict winning this series, Atlanta or Indiana?
One word, Pacers.
Pacers? I would have to agree. The Pacers are the better seed, of course, and they've been talented all around.
And I'll just say this really quickly, Julian. I have to say I'm surprised that, you know, the Hawks are giving nothing against the Hawks, but I just feel, as you were seeming to note, the Pacers are the better team by far in my mind in that matchup, you know, and they Pacers at one time, you know, they were a little while ago, earlier this season, challenging the Heat. They were up there, you know. I know the Heat end up running away with the Eastern Conference, but this is a team that was, for a little while earlier this year, right up there. And I know they finished with the 3 seed, but still, it just seems a little surprising to me because of how the Indiana Pacers were throughout the season that the Hawks are actually giving them a series. I thought going into that series, I thought it would be no more than a 5-game series. So, but on that note, I still believe the Pacers are going to pull the series out.
How about you, Max?
Yeah, you know, the Hawks, obviously they dominated the Pacers yesterday, won by over 20 points, held them to less than 70 points. But, I mean, you know, the Hawks, I honestly think, in terms of pure talent, are better than the Pacers. The issue with the Hawks is, you know, they rank second in the NBA in assists. You think that they play together, but they don't. They really don't. It's really isolation basketball, and they dish it out to shooters. And when the shooters aren't shooting, they really don't have much to offer. You know, they managed to dominate yesterday despite only making 4 3-pointers, but they dominated by only scoring 90 points. So, you know, I think Josh Smith, you know, this was his chance to prove that he deserves a max contract. This was his chance to say, look, I have elite numbers. I'm the only player in the NBA who averaged the numbers I averaged collectively. But, you know, put it on the court. You don't, to me, a max contract doesn't go to a player that leads his team to a 44-38 record. A max contract doesn't go to a player that loses in the first round. A max contract goes to a player who's competing for a title. And Josh Smith isn't competing for a title. And this was his chance. You know, Al Horford has been sensational. Jeff Teague, you know, he struggled a bit yesterday, but he's been playing very well. Ivan Johnson's been playing well. But at the end of the day, you know, Paul George has been playing out of his mind basketball. David West is one of my all-NBA team picks this year. Roy Hibbert's playing great defense. I just think that Indiana plays as a team and Atlanta plays as a bunch of good players.
Yeah, no doubt. I like the point you made that Atlanta's talented all around, but they've dealt with some problems. So once again, I see Indiana coming out on top. Won't be too much of a surprise at all if they win. So, Let's go on to the next matchup, Brooklyn and Chicago. What a game yesterday that everyone knows about, the three overtime thriller. First going to you, Max. Was this one hell of a game or what?
It was an incredible team game. Anytime you go to three overtimes, it's an incredible game. But, I mean, how about Nate Robinson? You know, because of his name value, you might not think this. Nate Robinson just put on one of the greatest playoff performances in NBA history. He was 1 point shy of Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls record with 23 points in the fourth quarter. The Chicago Bulls were trailing bad in the fourth quarter. You know, you see the box score and you say, oh, well, they outscored him by 8 points to tie it. They were trailing by a lot more than that. And the entire offense shut down. You know, Noah was playing on one foot and he was doing all he could, but, you know, his shot wasn't falling. You know, Taj Gibson couldn't really get much to go. It came down to Nazi Muhammad and Nate Robinson. And Nate Robinson scored 23 points in the fourth quarter, single-handedly willed this team to victory. It was incredible. You know, every shot he was throwing up was going in. And it wasn't just open look. He was taking difficult, off-balance shots over defenders that were 6 inches taller than him. I mean, that was if you need a reason to watch the playoffs this year, Nate Robinson's performance and the Bulls as a team just gave you a reason why.
Yeah, Nate Robinson, I've always said it, but he's always been one hell of a player. If you view him as overrated or underrated, I've always still felt to this day that Nate Robinson, he's a pure leader, I think, and the way he's been able to replace Derrick Rose in the playoffs and come up with this huge win is sure a big thing. So let's hear from you, Sean, but what did you think of the game? I mean, was it one hell of a game or what?
Yes, it was, and I have to say kudos to Nate Robinson. He did. I feel I have to agree with Max. He single-handedly won that game for the Bulls yesterday. But I got to say this, Julian. I would not be surprised if, in the end, despite the talent that the Bulls have, I mean, Brooklyn's got a decent team themselves. They have a decent coach, a coach who was hot at times this year in P.J. Carlissimo. So I wouldn't be surprised if Brooklyn steals this series. And they got a guy who deserves a lot of credit despite having to endure the loss yesterday, Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson, he played one hell of a game, to say the least, in the losing effort. But I'm inclined to say I think Brooklyn's going to end up winning that series.
The winner of this matchup will take on the Miami Heat. So, Max, do you think Brooklyn, like Sean said, can overcome the Chicago Bulls and then play the Miami Heat?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, due to the health, you know, the Nets are the better team. You know, Deron Williams, in terms of production since the All-Star break, he's been the best point guard in the NBA in terms of the way he's producing. And even yesterday, you know, Kirk Heinrich is an incredible defender. You know, he's not a superstar name, and he put up 18 points and 14 assists, but his greatest contribution is he's an elite on-ball defender. He routinely slows down the top point guards in the NBA. And Deron Williams still goes for 32 points and 10 assists yesterday. So, you know, I think that the Nets have the better team, but the problem is, you know, Joe Johnson played a great game, but he has plantar fasciitis, the same issue as Joakim Noah. It's going to be tough for the Nets, but they should win game five. They are going to be at home. My question, but, you know, and then it comes down to, can they win one game on the road for game six and bring it back home? And it'll be tough because, you know what, Chicago, their crowd during playoff games is one of the best crowds. And, you know, I honestly, you know, we've all been speculating this. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes to game six and we're in Chicago. I would not be surprised if Derrick Rose suits up.
Well, yeah, there was a report online recently that Derrick Rose's brother said that Derrick Rose could be back very soon. Very soon. I mean, Sean, just by hearing Derrick Rose's brother saying this, I mean, what can you make out of this statement?
I can make this one simple statement. If Derrick Rose comes back during this series at any point, that changes my prediction 360 degrees in the other direction. I say that if Derrick Rose comes back at any point during the remainder of this series with Brooklyn, then he is 100%. He is as close to 100%, and he's been saying he's not coming back till he feels he's that. So if he comes back, then he's obviously 100% and ready to go. And I think Chicago will win the series should Derrick Rose come back, because just like in Boston's cases we were hinting on a few moments ago, Derrick Rose makes things happen for the Bulls. Not that Nate Robinson doesn't. Yeah, give him credit, though, since you hinted, Julian, that he stepped in nicely and filled in for Derrick Rose. But to me, Derrick Rose is the floor general of the Chicago Bulls, and they need him, in my opinion, if they're going to win this series with Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, I think Chicago is going to easily win against Brooklyn. I think they're going to go on and play the Miami Heat. And if Derrick Rose were to come back, I mean, man, tell me how interesting the matchup could get between Miami and Chicago.
It could get interesting, Julian. Go ahead, Max.
That's okay. I think that if Derrick Rose returns and they play Miami, which would be their next round opponent after Miami clinched, it would be interesting to see. I think it would go to 7 games. I still think that Miami would win the series. But, you know, I said at the beginning of the playoffs, there are three teams that are wild cards that could take down the Heat, and that's the Brooklyn Nets, because they have Brook Lopez, who they can pound it in low to, and we know that Miami is not too great defending the interior. They also have players that match up well at every position. Obviously, the Nets aren't playing that well. The other one was the Knicks, and the other team is the Chicago Bulls if Derrick Rose is healthy. You know, the Bulls have a long history with the Heat, and, you know, I think the biggest problem for teams playing the Heat is they're afraid of them. They go in saying, well, we're playing the mighty Heat. The Bulls go in and say, well, this is just another game. Yeah, I don't care what the name on the back of your jersey is. We're playing the Miami Heat, so we're playing this team from Miami. We're going to their house, they're coming to our house. The Bulls ended their streak. The Bulls ended the Knicks' winning streak. The Bulls know what it takes to unseat an elite team. The Bulls will play elite defense against the Heat. They'll hold them to less than 100 points. You know, Joakim Noah will give everything he has on 1 foot, no feet, with no hands. It doesn't matter. You know he's going to give everything. Carlos Boozer is playing at an extraordinary level, which a lot of people aren't talking about. He's top 20 points in 3 of the 4 games. In the other game, he had 13 points and 12 rebounds. You know, Kirk Heinrich is playing incredible defense. As we talked about, Nate Robinson is playing out of his mind. Even Nazi Muhammad is coming to life. So if Derrick Rose comes back, you know, you have Luol Deng, who has a history of playing well against LeBron James. Anything could happen. I would say it goes to 7 games, at least 6 games. I'd say Miami is obviously still the favorite team, but if Derrick Rose is back, if he's still the same player he was, anything is possible.
Yeah. The number to the show is 646-716-5733 to listen on overtime, as we're about to do so. So let me just say one last thing. Derrick Rose comes back. If the Chicago Bulls win against the Brooklyn Nets, then I think they could build off so much momentum that I feel they could strongly defeat the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat, they didn't have that much of a hurdle to overcome against Milwaukee. I think Miami doesn't know what's coming. If Chicago can win against Brooklyn, then advance on with Derrick Rose back in the lineup, I think Chicago can strongly defeat the Miami Heat.
Julian, for the reason that you just said, I have to agree. I mean, if Chicago beats Brooklyn, outlasts Brooklyn in that series, and Derrick Rose comes back, I mean, it's all speculation at this point. But if he comes back, then for the reason that Max also said, the Bulls are the team that snapped that Heat 27-game winning streak last month. So I can see it. I mean, I can see it. The Bulls are a team that they fear no one. And they don't fear the Heat. They Kirk Heinrich got physical with the Heat in that game where they snapped the Heat's winning streak. Kirk Heinrich on one play, I remember, got real physical, ripped the ball away from, I believe it might have been Chris Bosh, when he was going to go down court. He just ripped it right out of his hands on one play late in the game. So that just proves that the Bulls are physical, and they're not afraid to be physical for the point of view with the Heat. So I could say that if the Bulls beat the Nets, I think they could beat the Heat.
Just taking these facts just for a sec, but Jared Sperling from ESPN New York, and Max just even said it, but the New York Knicks can make the Eastern Conference Finals, which could lead to a matchup between Chicago and New York, two very huge markets. I mean, wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't it be something? But until, say this, Julian, until somebody beats the Heat, you can't count them out. Until you beat the reigning champions, you can't count out the Miami Heat.
Yep. Well, I think we've had enough with the Eastern Conference. So we're going to go on over to the Western Conference, beginning with Oklahoma State Thunder and the Houston Rockets. The Thunder, they came off a important win last night against Houston. They are now leading the series 3-0. Although they are now without Russell Westbrook for the remainder of the postseason, which leads me to you, Max, but how significant of a loss was this for the Thunder? And do you think the Thunder can first get through Houston, but then get through the rest of the NBA playoffs without Russell Westbrook?
I think Houston's going to take game four, but I think the Thunder will close out in game five. You know, the past two games between these two teams have been down to the wire. They've been decided by one possession. So it's been a very fun series, two great offensive teams, two elite scorers in Kevin Durant and James Harden. It's unfortunate that both Russell Westbrook and Jeremy Lin have been battling injuries. But, you know, on the topic of Westbrook, you know, they'll beat Houston. I just don't think if they get past either the Clippers or the Grizzlies, I don't think they stand a chance if they draw the San Antonio Spurs. And they certainly don't stand a chance against the Miami Heat. You know, Durant, you know, we've all always said it. We've always wanted Durant to be as aggressive as Carmelo Anthony is because Durant is the best scorer in the NBA, and there's really no close second. The only one you can really compare is Kobe Bryant because he's Kobe. But, you know, you see a guy like Carmelo Anthony today, he goes 10 of 35 from the field, which is ridiculous. With Kevin Durant's length, with his ability to shoot, with his ability to go inside, and as we saw last night over Omer Asik, he could rise up over a defender and throw down an insane dunk. you know, you want to see Kevin Durant put up at least 25 shots per game. And that sounds like a lot, but, you know, when you're a three-time scoring champion and one of the top 10 players in the NBA was your teammate and now he's injured, you need to step up because right now the only two other reliable options offensively are Kevin Martin and Serge Ibaka. And you don't know if you can trust either of those guys. So it really is on Kevin Durant. You know, you will need to see something Jordan-esque out of him if they're going to win the title. I don't think they're going to get past the Clippers. I think they could beat Memphis because Memphis is more defensive-oriented. They're not an explosive offensive team. But if they did make it to the Western Conference Finals and they drew the San Antonio Spurs, I don't think Kevin Durant would be enough, you know, unless Westbrook makes a Meta World Peace type of comeback. I don't think it's enough.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an unfair matchup if there were to be the Oklahoma City Thunder and the L.A. Clippers. Now, I understand the Clippers are tied 2-2 right now with Memphis, but if they were to advance and play the Oklahoma City Thunder, then I believe it would be a very unfair matchup between Chris Paul, who is the All-Star Game MVP, who is absolutely phenomenal this year, going up against Reggie Jackson and Derek Fisher, if you want to add him. Russell Westbrook is a huge loss, which leads me to ask you, Sean, but do you think the Oklahoma City Thunder can first get through with Houston, but then get through the L.A. Clippers or even Memphis?
I will say this, Julian. I do believe that the Thunder will beat the Rockets. I mean, because the Rockets, in my eyes, from what I've seen in that series, their best scorer is a guy Max was hitting on, James Harden. James Harden is really taking on, you know, a type of role that Kobe did down the stretch, not as far as minutes go, but you know, he is, you know, been the main scoring option, I feel, for the Rockets. So for that reason, I think that Oklahoma City and Kevin Durant, I just think, especially when they play at home, if any of those games go back to Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma City's been one of the best home teams in the league. So even without Westbrook, I think they'll beat the Rockets. But I think should the Clippers win that series, I like your point, Julian. I think it would be an unfair matchup, and I would actually take the Clippers over the Thunder. I just the way Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are doing what they doing out in Los Angeles, I would take the Clippers. But should the Grizzlies win, then I would take the Thunder. So it all depends on who wins that ultimately wins for me, wins that Grizzlies-Clipper matchup to play the Thunder. But and even if the Grizzlies win and the Thunder were to advance, I think that the Spurs, you know, with the way they're destroying my Lakers and just, you know, I know the Lakers are banged up, but still, they still have Dwight Howard, a guy who's been to the finals. And, you know, the Spurs are just Tim Duncan's playing out of his world right now. So I think the Spurs got to be considered the prohibitive favorite right now in the West.
Well, we're getting a little off topic here. So, but, yeah, I want to just quickly get your guys' thoughts on the Clippers and Grizzlies matchup going to you, Max, but who do you think will win in that series?
I still have the Clippers. You know, a lot of people are jumping the gun on this and saying, wow, the Grizzlies really blew them out two consecutive games. But, you know, I think we all expected this series to go to seven games. It did last year. You know, the Clippers dominated them in game one. And then they escaped in game two. And, you know, the Grizzlies have really held them down over the past two games. But, you know, how many times do you expect the Grizzlies to score 100 points in a game? They barely did in the regular season. So, you know, the Clippers still own the home court advantage. I think they'll win game five on Tuesday. You know, and maybe the Grizzlies will hold down home court in game six, but I don't see the Clippers losing at home. They've been too good at the Staples Center this year. I can't imagine the Clippers losing this series. You know, they're led by Chris Paul, as we all said. At Staples Center, they're 34-9, including the games against the Lakers. So, you know, they entered the postseason as hot as anyone. They have as deep of a roster as anyone, and I think they just have too much offense.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Clippers over Memphis. I just think the Clippers will defeat Memphis and then go on to face the Thunder. I think if they were to win Game 5, it will be a big win at home, as I feel they can just take advantage of the series and win. So I have the Clippers over Memphis, but how about you, Sean?
I got the Julian. If you had to ask me when push comes to shove, I'm going to go with you guys and go with the Clippers. I just think they've been, as Max was saying, I think they've been too good for too long this year. So I think I'm going with the Clippers to outlast Memphis.
Okay, well, we can't waste any more time. We only have 5 minutes, guys, so please make it quick. Denver and Golden State. Golden State is leading 2-1. Golden State, don't forget, is now without David Lee. So, Sean, do you think Denver can still come away with this series when they're down 1-2?
Yes. I think Denver's going to win that series. I like their offense. I like George Karl in the playoffs, so I go with Denver.
And you, Max?
I actually think the Warriors are going to win. You know, the Nuggets are the better team in terms of the statistics and the win-loss record, but, you know, everyone say, well, they have the home court advantage. Yeah, but they're down 2-1, and Game 4 is being played in Golden State. If the Warriors win this and go up 3-1, I think they win in six. You know, everyone talks about how explosive Denver's offense is. The Warriors are just as explosive. The main difference is this. The Warriors are the best three-point shooting team in the league. They have the best three-point shooter in the league in Stephen Curry. The Nuggets are in the bottom five of three-point shooting and free throw shooting. So when it comes down to it, I don't think the Nuggets can shoot as well as the Warriors, and that's going to be the determining factor in the series.
Yeah, I'm actually going with Golden State as well. Even though I was high on Denver, but just by realizing how this series is playing out, I think Golden State can come up with the win, as I feel they have depth at the four, even without David Lee. They have Carl Landry, Draymond Green. I mean, I think they've had a terrific year, and they're not going to let it down against the Denver Nuggets, so I'm going to go with Golden State over Denver. Now, lastly, we know right now the San Antonio Spurs are up 3-0 against the LA Lakers. We knew this was going to happen. The unfortunate fall of the LA Lakers, we knew this was going to happen. I'm pretty sure you guys have the San Antonio Spurs over LA. So I'm just going to ask this final question to you guys. But Max, what are your last words on the 2012 and 2013 Los Angeles Lakers?
I mean, honestly, it's tragic. You know, you... If Kobe Bryant's healthy, you're looking at a competitive series. You're looking at least six games. I still think the Spurs would win. You know, it's not just Kobe. You're starting point guard Steve Nash. You're starting shooting guard Kobe Bryant. You're starting small forward Metta World Peace. Your backup point guard Steve Blake. Your backup shooting guard Jody Meeks are all injured. That's your top two players at point guard and shooting guard, and you're starting small forward. Jordan Hill, your backup center, has come back, but he's still a little banged up. Right now, they are starting Darius Morris and Andrew Gadilock against Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. I just don't think there's anything else to say.
And you, Sean?
utter destruction of the Spurs by the Spurs on the Lakers. So I think Spurs will close it out tonight, and shortly into the offseason, D'Antoni will be fired.
One of the most disappointing seasons in history, and just an unfortunate fall for the LA Lakers. As we're out of time, I want to thank our listeners for joining. I want to also thank you guys for joining. You can follow Max on Twitter at Maxwell Ogden. You can follow me at JBravoSK. You can follow Sean at DocOfSports20. You listen to this episode on iTunes and Stitcher. Don't forget that the Kingdom will be on sometime soon. Make sure you follow us here on Blog Talk Radio and Twitter for the latest updates. That's about all, and I want to thank you guys again for joining. Peace out, guys.